Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. What a pleasure it is to have you here with us tonight. And of course, Jonathan Lowe is our in-studio producer, the one I work with the most. Also, producers are Chris Tubbs, who does the 9 o'clock hour, and of course, Jonathan doing the 7 through 8 o'clock hour. So the 9 o'clock hour is for Chris Tubbs. And then usually at 10 o'clock, it's the Mom and Michael hour with my son, Michael Battle. Jonathan, I don't know if you know this, but he just celebrated his birthday. Boy, did he have a great birthday. So he won't be joining us tonight, just so he can recuperate tonight before he goes to work tomorrow. So there you go. How you doing, Jonathan?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
You know, I'm doing very well. I have a lot to do. I'm excited about all the things that are coming up. I'm performing on Thanksgiving night, and I'm really excited about that. So, yeah, things are going really well. I will say that I didn't get to watch any sports this week. I was so busy. I didn't get to watch it. So you got to fill me in on the good stuff. It didn't work out, did it?
The Timberwolves did okay.
Did they win?
They did. That's what I'm saying. They're doing okay. They've won three in a row. The Wild won last night. Prep football,
awesome.
High school football is coming to a close. We'll have the annual Prep Bowl, which is the championships for all the levels of high school football. Usually it's the day after Thanksgiving and the Saturday after Thanksgiving. But this year, because the Vikings are actually playing on Thanksgiving night over at U.S. Bank Stadium, they've moved that out a week. So we've been talking about it, and people should know by now. It's not going to be next weekend. It's going to be the weekend after. But speaking of the Vikings,
What? What are you saying?
So this was not a good weekend for Viking football. And this was not a good weekend for Gopher football. Gopher football could not score, and they lost the pig again.
Was that the one 48-0?
No.
There was some game that was 48-0.
No. That was I don't think that involved any Minnesota team.
No.
I'm sorry. 49-0. That was St. John's score. St. John's won their game in the first round of the NCAA Division III tournament, 49-0, over a school from St. Paul by the name of Northwestern University.
Oh, don't rub it in, dude.
Yeah. That's the 49-0 that you're talking about.
Ouch.
Today's score, Minnesota yesterday, they lost to Iowa, which meant they lost their trophy, which is a very big bronze pig.
Pig.
B-I-G, pig.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Not B-I-G, like big.
Big.
But a big pig.
B-I-G-P-I-G, big pig.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Called Floyd of Rosedale. That is the name of the trophy.
Oh, gosh. Seriously?
Oh, yes. It's very famous. It's one of the more famous trophies out there. It's Floyd of Rosedale.
Okay.
So they lost that yesterday again. And the Vikings... they were, I'm looking right now at a commercial from Cub Foods, and they have a basted turkey that you're going to serve at Thanksgiving. The Vikings wish they were that basted turkey. That's how bad they lost today.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. They got crushed.
So what do you think is the challenge then? How is it that they go from an exceptional game to not exceptional at all, except it's exceptionally bad?
It happens in sports. It happens all the time in
often,
sports.
Often, though?
Yes.
Oh, often? Okay.
Yes. A great equivalent would be the team that the Vikings were just tied for with the best record in the NFL, the Philadelphia Eagles. Philadelphia has started off the season 8-0. They were a very consistent and sometimes dominant team with the teams that they were playing. Last Monday, they played a division rival in Washington, and Washington shut them down and beat them, upset them in Philadelphia. And so it was a clunker game for the Eagles, even though they had been undefeated. Philadelphia went to Indianapolis today and almost lost again and almost had another clunker. So sports, most times, you're going to have inconsistency. That's why the teams that you hear about so often as being the greatest, the New York Yankees, the Boston Celtics, the Montreal Canadiens, the Los Angeles Lakers, recently the New England Patriots, the reason that they are held up to such high regard is because they are so consistently great, or had been, over such a long period of time. They didn't have those inconsistencies. And so that's why you hear about those teams more than you do, unfortunately, the Minnesota Vikings, the Minnesota
Gophers. Who's responsible for the inconsistencies, though, Jonathan? Is it the coach?
It depends. Sometimes coaching is horrible. Sometimes the players just don't execute. There are so many factors that go into winning in sports that you usually can't pin it. If you're mediocre, you can't pin it on one thing. It's usually a whole bunch of things. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say a bunch of things. It varies from time to time. If you're a bad team, then it's a bunch of things. Then it's coaching and players, talent, organization, scheme, whatever. It's a whole bunch of stuff that needs to be changed to even get to mediocre.
Well, you know, I'm just happy you didn't get hurt when you were playing football.
I never played football.
I know exactly. That's exactly my point.
What?
I'm amazed. I am amazed that those of us, including me and including a lot of men that I know, that play, you know, following football, and we love to, you know, really put the ones who are doing really, who are doing badly, we like to really expose them, you know, and say, hey, gosh, how could you do that? Oh, that was so stupid. Or it's amazing. I have many men in my life with my three brothers and some cousins that live here and some grandchildren that live here, and they have opinions about it, but none of them have played football.
But here's the thing. Yes, a lot of us have never played football. We have played sports on some level. I am not the best person to talk about as far as my experience in sports. That ended in high school. That ended really before high school.
Mm-hmm. But high school is a beginning, right? It's a beginning.
For some. But the thing is, we also listen to people who have played in those arenas, that have played those specific sports. I'm going to listen to these analysts that have played football, basketball, hockey, soccer, tennis, baseball. I'm going to listen to them because they do have expertise. That doesn't mean I can't look at something and see it in front of my eyes and say, ooh, that was poor effort, or that was a bad angle that person took on that tackle, or that was that person just was completely fooled on a fastball or a changeup. You know, I can look at that and see, okay, that just doesn't look right to me compared to what I normally see as something that's good execution.
Right. Well, I'm just saying, you know, we all have our opinions about it all. And what do they call those
Monday night
coaches?
Quarterbacks,
yeah.
Monday night quarterbacks.
So, yeah. I know we got to take a break, you guys, and so stick with us.
It's Monday morning quarterbacks, not Monday night.
Monday morning?
Yeah, Monday morning quarterbacks, because most football games are played on Sunday, And so the next morning, everybody's around the water cooler thinking that they know everything. And that's why they call it a Monday morning quarterback.
So everyone that's listening, as you can hear, Jonathan is teaching me a lot about sports. I used to know some things about basketball, seriously. I was like, yeah. And then all of a sudden I stopped. But football I became very interested in, had football parties and that sort of thing. But still, I didn't take on to it like I did basketball. And so now I'm really trying to reconnect with all of the sports that I used to know something about. And then, of course, golfing, because my brother, Fred, loves it and he's very good at it. I get so excited when I get a chance to watch golf.
There
so.
Were a couple big golf results today, too.
Oh, really? I didn't get to watch any today. Yep. Oh, my goodness.
The PGA Tour had their last full field event before they take their break for basically the holidays. Mm-hmm. And the LPGA, the ladies PGA Tour, had their tour championship in today.
How'd that go?
It went well. Lydia Ko, who was a star on the LPGA Tour, ended up winning that event. And so she's had a bit of a comeback this year. Had some good results, had a couple wins this year.
That's awesome. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll come back in just a moment.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know about you, Jonathan, but I still dance when I hear this song. Some people say, someone said to me not long ago, that song has been out for like 15 years. No, I don't think so.
No,
maybe 10?
I don't even think that long. I think maybe 7. I think maybe 15.
No,
yeah.
It's got to be more than that.
No. You know, I want to say it came out about 2000, maybe 2014, but I thought around 2015 or 16.
Please look it up when you have a chance. Hey, everyone, I want to make sure that I heard this correctly, Jonathan. I heard you say that more heard someone say there are more restaurants that are closing. Is that true?
Yes, there are. I've seen, I know that Susie has talks about it in her newscasts. I've also seen a couple of stories on the various news channels, 4, 5, 9, 11, talking about this. And I can't remember the name, not Aurora, but there was one that Susie talks about in her story that she will continue to talk about through the evening. I know that I recently heard this weekend that Stella's Fish Market is going to close. I just saw today that Williams Uptown Bar is closing. It's continuing to be an issue.
So is it all over the Twin Cities or no?
Yeah. It's not just concentrated on one area. It's all over the cities. It's all over the country. This is something that is happening all over the country because of the struggle to try to get everything back on track from a supply chain standpoint and an inflation standpoint and a recovery from the pandemic standpoint.
So what about Rock Bottom Brewery? Have you heard anything about them?
I haven't. I'm going to have to look and see if anything is going on.
It's under the list of closing or changing. And so I'm just really... here it says the state's oldest brew pub, Rock Bottom Brewery, quietly closed in October. Rock Bottom burst onto the scene nearly 30 years ago at the brew pub's second location. The first was in Denver. Man, I'm sorry to hear that. I remember going to that restaurant a few times. I remember we had Father's Day at Rock Bottom, which is right underneath Crave downtown Minneapolis on Hennepin.
Yes.
And it changed. You know, there was the interior. If you went further into the restaurant, of course, when you first came in, you would see the big brewery, gigantic things in there, and you would be able to sit by the bar and have whatever. But if you wanted to have, like, a nice, fancy dinner, it was just beautifully. The decor was so beautiful, and I really appreciated that. And so to know that it's gone, because it slowly started getting more casual and more casual, and I just stopped going there. There's also a place called Red Table Meat Company. I don't know anything about that. Unbelievable. It just breaks my heart when they start closing. I remember when Seven Steakhouse, the sushi and rooftop, I don't know if you ever went there at 700 Hennepin Avenue, but let me tell you, it was fantastic.
I only walked in that place once, and it was kind of during the day. I was during a slow period. It wasn't at night when it was hopping and everything was jumping over there. It was kind of just a slow period, and I just walked in, asked about the menu, and just kind of moved on. So, no, I never really
made it
over
there. The menu was fantastic. It was really great. And they would kind of open and close, that sort of thing. But, yeah, they've been gone for a while now. And I'm looking through this list trying to figure out any of the ones that I know of that hurts your heart. The Apostle Supper Club, though, and False Idol, these are open. And I've been trying to get... I've been trying to get a reservation at the Apostle in downtown St. Paul, and I'm frustrated because I can't seem to get in yet. But I'll keep trying.
It's,
I heard it's really, really good.
You know, this has been for the last couple years. I consider myself to have been fortunate. Mm-hmm. There were places that I knew of that I frequented that had closed down. A couple. There's one of the Mad Jack's locations that used to be up in Badness Heights that closed early in the I want to say September of 2020 or October of 2020. The Ginger Hop up here on Hennepin.
Man, that was smoking. That was just great food.
They closed down.
Yeah. That was a while ago too.
Yeah, that was a couple years ago. There's actually a new place in there now, an Indian place.
Oh, cool.
An Indian food place.
Do you like East Indian food?
I do. I don't have it enough, but I like it. But I didn't really get affected by it as much until this year when a couple of staples that I went to closed down in late July and late August. And so it's kind of that gloom and doom over your shoulder that you know it's coming. Just the way that the economics have been going for the last couple of years, you know it's coming. You just don't know when.
Well, I will say this. There is one place that opened, and it seems like more are opening than those that are closing, so I'm really happy to hear that. But there's one called Wineside. It's at 1641 Plymouth Road in Minnetonka. And here's what's interesting about it. It's located where Champs at Ridgedale Center. Now that that's gone, this place, Wineside, has taken over, and it's a hybrid. It's a liquor store, a restaurant, a wine bar, and a grocery store.
I think people are trying to get more creative with what they have and not just have the traditional restaurant, not just have the traditional bar, but have options like something you wouldn't see, it, kind of a cross between a Whole Foods and a restaurant. I'll give you another example. Serdix up here on
But Serdix
Central
has been doing that for a long time, man. They've been doing, you know, things that people didn't expect. You know, it all started with the cheese and the wine, and then it just started flourishing. And there are a couple other places like that. And by the way, when I talked about Wineside, I should have mentioned that they offer, like, cheese, of course, but charcuterie plates, and I just love charcuterie boards. And so if people know about it, sandwiches and salads and all of that is happening too, but I'm going to Wineside. Okay, we got to take a break, and we'll come back in a moment. It is now 7:35 here at WCCO. Welcome. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talk, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. I am so excited for my next guest. Of course, it has been done now, and I'll tell you all about that. It has been a turbulent few years for the Minneapolis Police Department. A large number of officers have left a department that continues to be scrutinized, even to the point of the ongoing federal investigation for its practices and procedures. Now, this is a situation that Brian O'Hara walks into. The former deputy mayor and police captain of Newark, New Jersey, has the unenviable task of overseeing MPD's culture change, restaffing the ranks, and most importantly, bettering the relationship with the city as a whole. The new chief of the Minneapolis Police Department is gracious enough to join us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Welcome, sir. How are you?
Hi, Jalen. Thank you for having me.
It is just a pleasure. How are you dealing with the weather and the people and all there is to know about Minneapolis?
Well, the weather was doing great the first few weeks I was here. It felt like it was 70 degrees every day. Then all of a sudden, just took a turn. So I am adjusting, that's for sure.
Keep all of a sudden in mind. It happens often, that's for sure. You know, I was reading about the Minneapolis Police Department, and it is the primary law enforcement agency here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We know that. It is also the largest police department in Minnesota, founded in 1867, and it is the second oldest police department, only after St. Paul's department that was formed in 1854. Now, police who in turn reports to the chief, the assistant chief of police, who in turn reports to the chief, really surprised me when I was reading this online. I don't know why they wouldn't go directly to you. How are you going to look at that now that you are the police chief here in Minneapolis?
Well, thank you. I mean, it all kind of works through the chain of command. So individual police officers report to sergeants, who then report to lieutenants and so on. So it's a very structured chain of command, so that the idea behind it is essentially each person within the organization has only one person that they have to report to.
Well, that's good. The city is also divided into five precincts, which I didn't know that before I read this, with 800 sworn officers. Now, many of the articles I've been reading, the numbers change. Is it 800 sworn in officers right now?
No, I mean, probably before the pandemic, it was around 900 officers, but
right.
No, it's below 600 now. So hundreds of people have left. There's been a struggle, since the uprising, civil unrest. There's been a struggle to replenish the ranks. There's been a struggle to change perceptions here among people, to get people willing to come on board and bring the city and the department forward and be a part of the change that we want to see.
Yes, and we are looking forward to that, sir. So may I ask, what would you say you are now bringing to the Minnesota, to the Minneapolis Police Department that we did not have before you arrived?
Sure. Well, I mean, the one thing, obviously I'm from Newark, so I think there's two things that are most important to the people who are here that are very relevant to the experiences that I've lived through. And that's, Newark is a city that's known historically for problems around police-community relations, you know, for decades. And also for decades, serious issues around gun violence. And I think those are the two priorities that I think everyone would kind of universally agree are serious issues here in our city. And you know, the reality is today, Newark is not the same place it was 5 years, let alone 10 years ago, in terms of either one of those issues. So having had the experience of leading police reform, leading a federal consent decree in Newark, leading significant reductions around gun violence and serious street crime, I think that's stuff that's directly applicable to the people's experience here in Minneapolis.
I mean, we expect this, sir, and I understand that. I guess my question then is, what will be some of the changes to the public safety systems? To me, what is happening with police, what is happening with the violence in North Minneapolis, specifically where I live, really is sad to hear, but I know that the mayor has been trying desperately to make changes in this area. And if we're going to make changes in making sure that we go after those that are being violent, we also have to go after the public safety amendments and trying to figure out what is it that we need in order to make sure that public safety systems continue to exist.
That's right. That's right. Well, certainly we can't have public safety without the public, right? So
right.
Law enforcement is a collaborative effort, and to the extent that we're doing actual law enforcement, we want to collaborate with all of the other federal, state, county partners that we have to engage in that effort. An example of that was this past Friday night. I addressed a roll call in North Minneapolis, where we then initiated a focused enforcement effort. That within an hour after that, there were 7 illegal guns recovered from the streets in North Minneapolis, a total of 23 for the night citywide. And those are the efforts that we need to do collaboratively to obviously deal with the situation that we have hundreds of fewer officers that we had before, but also to focus precisely on that really small percentage of people in the community who are causing the most harm, who are out there pulling triggers and also at risk for becoming victims of violence themselves, but additionally finding ways to partner with community to ensure that we're community-informed in the strategies that we adopt and also help and support community-based violence prevention programs as well.
You know, when you were in Newark, I believe you became chief or, no, I'm sorry, officer, police officer mm-hmm. in 2001, if I'm not mistaken. And that time, that particular police force used excessive force as well, right? And so here in the Twin Cities, our MPS initially, Minneapolis Police Department, forgive me, we've had those same challenges over the years. And I'm wondering, sure. Now that you've come from a place with that same thing that we have had here, how do you correct it here?
Well, certainly these things don't change overnight. And I was just fortunate that I was able to rise through the ranks in Newark to various supervisory positions and to be in a position to actually, you know, cultivate behaviors that community want to see that represent community values. And I think that's exactly what we need to do here. I think it's something that not one person can change in terms of culture, but I think it's something that the chief himself needs to lead, as well as the leadership of the agency. And I think the bottom line is it's something we have to do every single day to ensure that we are lifting up the behaviors that we want to see when officers are doing the things that reflect the values of community. And it's also something that we have to show that there are immediate consequences when some officers step outside the norms and the values that communities expect to see.
I have read so much about police chief all over the country. I've been very interested in it for many years. And I must say, unfortunately, we do hear the same story that we have heard mm-hmm. here in the Twin Cities and the great state of Minnesota. We've heard it in some of the major cities around the country. And it feels mm-hmm. as though it never is solved. It's never solved. Yeah. Usually that police police chief ends up either resigning or moving on to something mm-hmm. else or quitting, you name it. And I don't understand how we're ever going to get to peace if we can't even yeah. seem to keep the leadership that could possibly solve this problem.
Yes. Well, I do think that the essence of it is we will never be in a place where it is over, right? I think there is always going to be work to be done. However, I think we need to ensure that we are doing the things that we need to do to be supportive so that there's processes in place that provide a check on the system. And that we have to be effective when we are checking officers' behaviors if we actually want to arrive in a place where we have a true sense of accountability. But it's not something that will ever be done. I mean, I think the essence of it is it's work that continues indefinitely.
My goodness, I didn't expect to hear that. But I will say that I was excited to read about the street team. Can you tell me more about that? And will it be implemented here?
Sure. Well, the North Community Street Team is something that started several years ago now. A friend of mine, Akilah Shirills, who was a part of the initial truce in the Jordan Downs housing projects in Watts in L.A., years ago. And it's something we started to have a community-based approach to public safety to address gun violence as a public health problem, and it's something that was initially kind of difficult for police officers and prosecutors and people.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
It is now 7:35 here at WCCO. Welcome. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talk, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. I am so excited for my next guest. Of course, it has been done now, and I'll tell you all about that. It has been a turbulent few years for the Minneapolis Police Department. A large number of officers have left a department that continues to be scrutinized, even to the point of the ongoing federal investigation for its practices and procedures. Now, this is a situation that Brian O'Hara walks into. The former deputy mayor and police captain of Newark, New Jersey, has the unenviable task of overseeing MPD's culture change, restaffing the ranks, and most importantly, bettering the relationship with the city as a whole. The new chief of the Minneapolis Police Department is gracious enough to join us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Welcome, sir. How are you?
Hi, Jalen. Thank you for having me.
It is just a pleasure. How are you dealing with the weather and the people and all there is to know about Minneapolis?
Well, the weather was doing great the first few weeks I was here. It felt like it was 70 degrees every day. Then all of a sudden, just took a turn. So I am adjusting. That's for sure.
Keep all of a sudden in mind. It happens often. That's for sure. You know, I was reading about the Minneapolis Police Department, and it is the primary law enforcement agency here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We know that. It is also the largest police department in Minnesota, founded in 1867, and it is the second oldest police department, only after St. Paul's department that was formed in 1854. Now, police who in turn reports to the chief, the assistant chief of police, who in turn reports to the chief, really surprised me when I was reading this online. I don't know why they wouldn't go directly to you. How are you going to look at that now that you are the police chief here in Minneapolis?
Well, thank you. I mean, it all kind of works through the chain of command. So individual police officers report to sergeants, who then report to lieutenants and so on. So it's a very structured chain of command, so that the idea behind it is essentially each person within the organization has only one person that they have to report to.
Well, that's good. The city is also divided into five precincts, which I didn't know that before I read this, with 800 sworn officers. Now, many of the articles I've been reading, the numbers change. Is it 800 sworn in officers right now?
No, I mean, probably before the pandemic, it was around 900 officers, but
right.
No, it's below 600 now. So hundreds of people have left. There's been a struggle, since the uprising, civil unrest. There's been a struggle to replenish the ranks. There's been a struggle to change perceptions here among people, to get people willing to come on board and bring the city and the department forward and be a part of the change that we want to see.
Yes, and we are looking forward to that, sir. So may I ask, what would you say you are now bringing to the Minnesota, to the Minneapolis Police Department that we did not have before you arrived?
Sure. Well, I mean, the one thing, obviously I'm from Newark, so I think there's two things that are most important to the people who are here that are very relevant to the experiences that I've lived through. And that's, Newark is a city that's known historically for problems around police-community relations, for decades. and also for decades, serious issues around gun violence. And I think those are the two priorities that I think everyone would kind of universally agree are serious issues here in our city. And you know, the reality is today, Newark is not the same place it was 5 years, let alone 10 years ago, in terms of either one of those issues. So having had the experience of leading police reform, leading a federal consent decree in Newark, leading significant reductions around gun violence and serious street crime, I think that's stuff that's directly applicable to the people's experience here in Minneapolis.
I mean, we expect that, sir, and I understand that. I guess my question then is, what will be some of the changes to the public safety systems? To me, what is happening with police, what is happening with the violence in North Minneapolis, specifically where I live, really is sad to hear, but I know that there, the mayor has been trying desperately to make changes in this area. And if we're going to make changes in making sure that we go after those that are being violent, we also have to go after the public safety amendments and trying to figure out what is it that we need in order to make sure that public safety systems continue to exist.
That's right. That's right. Well, certainly we can't have public safety without the public, right? So
right.
Law enforcement is a collaborative effort. And to the extent that we're doing actual law enforcement, we want to collaborate with all of the other federal, state, county partners that we have to engage in that effort. An example of that was this past Friday night. I addressed a roll call in North Minneapolis where we then initiated a focused enforcement effort that within an hour after that, there were 7 illegal guns recovered from the streets in North Minneapolis, a total of 23 for the night citywide. And those are the efforts that we need to do collaboratively to obviously deal with the situation that we have hundreds of fewer officers that we had before, but also to focus precisely on that really small percentage of people in the community who are causing the most harm, who are out there pulling triggers, and also at risk for becoming victims of violence themselves, but additionally finding ways to partner with community to ensure that we're community informed in the strategies that we adopt, and also help and support community-based violence prevention programs as well.
You know, when you were in Newark, I believe you became police officer, mm-hmm. in 2001, if I'm not mistaken. And that time, that particular police force used excessive force as well, right? And so here in the Twin Cities, our MPS, initially, Minneapolis Police Department, forgive me, we've had those same challenges over the years. And I'm wondering, sure. Now that you've come from a place with that same thing that we have had here, how do you correct it here?
Well, certainly these things don't change overnight. And I was just fortunate that I was able to rise through the ranks in Newark to various supervisory positions and to be in a position to actually, you know, cultivate behaviors that community want to see that represent community values. And I think that's exactly what we need to do here. I think it's something that not one person can change in terms of culture, but I think it's something that the chief himself needs to lead, as well as the leadership of the agency. And I think the bottom line is it's something we have to do every single day to ensure that we are lifting up the behaviors that we want to see when officers are doing the things that reflect the values of community. And it's also something that we have to show that there are immediate consequences when some officers step outside the norms and the values that communities expect to see.
I have read so much about police chief all over the country. I've been very interested in it for many years. And I must say, unfortunately, we do hear the same story that we have heard here in the Twin Cities and the great state of Minnesota. We've heard it in some of the major cities around the country. And it feels as though it never is solved. It's never solved.
Yeah.
Usually that police department, police chief ends up either resigning or moving on to something else or quitting, you name it. And I don't understand how we're ever going to get to peace if we can't even seem to keep the leadership that could possibly solve this problem.
Yes. Well, I do think that the essence of it is, we will never be in a place where it is over, right? I think there is always going to be work to be done. However, I think we need to ensure that we are doing the things that we need to do to be supportive so that there's processes in place that provide a check on the system. And that we have to be effective when we are checking officers' behaviors if we actually want to arrive in a place where we have a true sense of accountability. But it's not something that will ever be done. I mean, I think the essence of it is it's work that continues indefinitely.
My goodness, I didn't expect to hear that, but I will say that I was excited to read about the street team. Can you tell me more about that, and will it be implemented here?
Sure. Well, the North Community Street Team is something that started several years ago now. A friend of mine, Akilah Shirills, who was a part of the initial truce in the Jordan Downs housing projects in Watts in L.A., years ago. And it's something we started to have a community-based approach to public safety, to address gun violence as a public public health problem. And it's something that was initially, kind of difficult for police officers and prosecutors and people with traditional law enforcement ideas, to accept. But it's something that expanded into many different areas in terms of involving community, having town hall meetings for public safety concerns for community, as well as trying to help ensure, safe passage and things like that for children going to school. So I know there's a number of programs here, like We Push for Peace and other groups that are community-based violence prevention programs. And I know there's a lot of promise here, and I'm 100% in terms of supporting those groups. But at the same time, I think it's important for people to realize, like, those groups are not here to be an arm of law enforcement. They provide a means to help diffuse and resolve conflicts in ways that police are just simply not capable to responding to. But I think it's very important that we support that as law enforcement, because we both have the same end goal in mind, and that's to save lives and have fewer victims of violence.
Before you became the chief, the new Minneapolis police chief, of course, there were questions about who is he, where is he from, who's going to be the one to get the, and if we're going to get someone, then we got to make sure that we pay them well so they will be willing to accept the job. And of course, the fee really increased. And I'm curious to know, then did the Minneapolis Police Department here, have they increased the police officers' salaries?
So there was my understanding is the union contract had a normal increase in their salaries, and I believe the contract is expiring again the end of the year. However, I do think there is a gap in terms of the appointed leadership. I don't believe that there has yet been a correction in the salaries of the appointed leadership of the agency, the folks who are commanders, inspectors, and chiefs, the people who don't make overtime, those people.
Yeah, that really concerns me. But more for that another day. I will ask you, though, what has been accomplished so far since you have arrived? Because I know when you got here, you immediately had to sit down and get right into it.
Sure. And even before I actually got the job, I mean, the biggest thing that I've been trying to work on in the entire time I've been here in Minneapolis is to get around as much as possible, to meet as many people in community, to be present, to go to various houses of worship and meet people and just kind of listen to people's concerns, to understand what people's experiences have been and what they would like to see going forward. Since I've been able to take the office and become a sworn law enforcement officer, that adds a different dimension to it. Now I'm able to be present with rank and file and with supervisors in the police department and kind of get under the hood and see how the police department is actually operating and try and identify gaps between where we are today versus where we want to be. So it's been a lot of listening and learning, I think, is the best way to describe it.
And listening is absolutely key, sir, absolutely key. And as we wrap up this conversation, I do want to ask whether or not, I know in every state, in every city, there are Minneapolis police departments sometimes change the way applicants may be able to be chosen. For example, some cities say you have to have a bachelor's degree in order to be a police officer. So what type of changes are we looking at? Are we still looking at that, where people have to have a bachelor's degree?
Well, yeah. So what I have learned since I have been here To me, it is very difficult for young people from the city to become police officers. And I think the vast majority of the reason why is because of, mandatory requirements that are in place by the state. So it is very important for me to try and do everything I can to remove barriers for young people from the city to become police officers. So that's something that I have just started to look at very intentionally. I will do everything to change everything I can do that's a city policy, but we're also going to be looking at what exactly the state requirements are and whether or not that's something that is actually necessary and actually results in, you know, the values and the people that the residents here want to see. The residents here want good policing. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, better than good. Absolutely, sir. Better than good. This is my final question, sir. What will the young people be offered? Because the one problem I've been here 44 years, and in my 44 years, I have watched the decline of these young people. They have nothing to do. You don't have a lot of basketball courts. You don't have a lot of sports outdoors during the summer, and a lot of them get into trouble. And I'm wondering about that because the community, the youth in the community need as much as what the police officers need, as much as what the residents need. And so how do you see the next step for the youth, especially for 2023 and 2024?
Yeah. Well, the one thing I think is in common between the community and particularly young people as well as the police officers is everyone here has experienced a whole lot of trauma over the last 2 or 3 years. And I think we have to be very intentional about addressing that. A terrible consequence of things that happened here and reduced staffing is sort of, as the police department gets smaller, it sort of went back to almost becoming a fire department. And by that, I mean simply only responding to things after the fact. And that's something that we cannot do. We have to be very proactive and intentional about community engagement. So one of the things that went away that I'm very happy is coming back now is the Police Activities League, because I think it's very important if we're serious about changing perceptions, particularly among young people, about the police department in the city. We have to ensure that we are engaging with young people and providing a space for them to develop relationships with officers that is not a law enforcement space. If the only time a kid in the city gets to see a cop is when something bad happens, that's not going to change anything. That's going to reinforce all of those negative things that we don't want to see, and that's gonna help that young person never even consider, you know, being a part of the change that we want to see. So I think we have to be very intentional about engagement. We have to get back into PAL. We have to get back into youth engagement and programs, because we have to do we have to be very proactive about trying to change those perceptions and have young people from the city want to be a part of doing things differently here.
Minneapolis Police Chief Brian O'Hara, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and I hope those final words are absolutely going to be put into place. I will be watching and listening, and I hope you will join me again.
Thank you, Mr. Owen.
Thank you, sir. All right, everyone, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back, everyone. It is now 7:56. I wanted to remind you that in the 8 o'clock hour, we have Blake Morgan is going to join us with Forbes Magazine. And, of course, at 8:35 is Gianna Kordatsky. And I'm looking forward to talking with both of them. So stay tuned.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.